Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 146 in this series entitled The Evolution of Consciousness, a journey through the three main periods of Jewish history. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, during the winter of 57-62.
As an anecdotal introduction to what we will be discussing today with Hashem's help, I'll share the following story. There was once a city in Eastern Europe that didn't have any mazel with its rabbis. The rabbis that it appointed were truly not fond, to put it mildly, with the Jewish residents of the city, and each of them resigned. So for years now, the city was looking for a rav, but they gained such a negative reputation, it was very difficult for them to attract a decent rabbi. So once they visited the distinguished Jewish community, and they found this Jew who was somewhat of a batlan, somewhat of an abstract human being, who was very immersed in Torah study, a great scholar, but who could be deceived. And they went into him and they said, you know, we have for you an offer, an extraordinary offer to become the rabbi of this and this city. So he says, what is so attractive about this offer that you call it extraordinary? He says, in our city you have all of the great giants buried. You have Rabbi Akiva Eiger, you have buried there. You have the Chassam Sofer buried there. You have the Ramah, Reb Moshe Isserlush buried there. You have the Bach buried there, the Taz, the Shach. And they go on and on. Everybody's buried there. A city where these great giants are buried. I mean, they've all been there. They all died there. It must be really special. So without blinking an eye, he says, I'm yours. He travels to the city. He's appointed as the Rav, and after a few days, he says, take me to the cemetery. I would like to visit all of these holy resting places. They say, well, what's in the cemetery? He says, what do you mean? Rabbi Akiva Eiger, the Chassam Sofer, the Ramah, the Shach, the Taz. They say, none of these people are buried here. Rabbi Akiva Eiger is buried in Poison. The Ramah is buried in Krakow. Chassam Sofer is buried in Pressburg. The Shach, I think, in Vilna, they're not buried. He says, you're pushing liars. You told me that everybody is buried here. They said, no, you didn't understand what we meant. So take, for example, Krakow. In Krakow, the Ramah is buried. The Ramah is dead in Krakow. In all the Batim Midrashim in Krakow, they're learning the Ramah. Everybody is learning the Ramah on Shulchan Aruch, the Mappa. The Ramah is alive and well. He's vibrant there. impressionable that some sefer is dead and buried. They learn the Chassam Sefer, they live with the Chassam Sefer, they breathe with the Chassam Sefer, the Chassam Sefer is alive and well. In poison, the Chidushim of Rabbi Akiva Eger fill the brain of every Jew there in the Beis Medrash. He says, Abedan, this city is an Allah Bagrab. Everybody here is dead, buried, nobody learns anything of anybody. Dozan and Allah Gdeli Yisrael's and in Da Taitum Bagrab. They're dead and buried here. Now, in these chapters 51, 52, 53 of the Tanya, the Alter Rebbe discusses Torah as the channel, the pipeline to life, to spiritual life, to the Shechina, the generator that allocates the spiritual electricity of godliness to all of the universes. And Alter Rebbe explained that the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the chamber of the Holy of Holies, which was the abode of the Ark and the tablets that encapsulate the entire Torah, this chamber, Kodesh HaKadoshim, served as the abode, the home for the Shechina, for the Divine Presence. Just as in a human being, his brain or her brain is the home of the soul, it's the seat of the soul. The same is true in the entire universe, in the macrocosm, that the brain, the place of the Holy of Holies, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is the cosmic brain, the place of Torah, the center of Torah, that's the center of the spiritual brain, the place of the Ark, the place of the tablets, there dwells the soul of the world, the cosmic soul, the soul of the universe, the Shechina, known as Malchus Da'atzilus in Kabbalistic terminology, dwells in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the cosmic brain. Each world, however, has its own particular brain. In other words, its own Kodesh HaKadoshim. Every world in all of the universes has its own chamber of the Holy of Holies, and there is the seat, that is the home, that is the abode of the soul, of the divine energy that is connected and attached to that particular world. Again, just as in the microcosm, there are many creatures in our world. Every creature has a particular and peculiar, unique soul that is custom made for this particular creature. And each of these creatures has a particular brain with a unique anatomy that is conducive for the soul that will relate to this creature, for the particular soul that becomes the soul of this particular creature. And although the brains have common properties, nonetheless, each brain has its distinct anatomy. So you have the human brain, you have the brain of an ape, there is the brain of a frog, and there is the brain of a mosquito. A mosquito has a brain that is as central to its life as the human brain is essential to its life and indispensable to its life. The same is true in the macrocosm. Every world has its particular brain. It's Kodesh HaKadoshim La'avdol. And that is the meeting place. That is the first meeting place. That is the location of marriage between the Shechina and the world, and that world. Between the divine energy. Between the Shechina that connects to that world, that is revealed in that world, that dwells in that world, and the creatures and the existences of that world. Just like in our existence, our brain is the meeting place. It's the point of connection between the soul and the body. And it's the level of the brain, and it's the level of the Shechina that lives in the brain of each particular world that determines the nature of the world, the nature of consciousness, the level of consciousness. The identity of the world is determined by the brain and the Shechina that dwells in that particular brain. To quote the Kabbalistic phraseology that Alter Rebbe continuously employed, is the Shechina, Malchus Da'atzilus, that is expressed in the world of Bria, which means the lowest level of Atzilus, the lowest level of divine energy of Atzilus, Malchus of Atzilus, that then becomes manifested in the world of Bria, first must enter into the brain of Bria, so to speak, into the Kodesh HaKadoshim of Bria, into the three faculties of Chachma, Bina, Das of the world of Bria. Next, the Shechina that dwells in the world of Yetzira, the next world, which is which level of Shechina? That is Malchus da Atzilus as it is enclosed in Malchus de Bria. In other words, the lowest level of Bria. That becomes the Shechina, the divine energy which will now be transmitted to the world of Yetzira and create that world and sustain that world and relate to that world and give the world its identity. That will first be manifested in the brain of Yetzira, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim of Yetzira, the Torah of Yetzira, the Chabad of Yetzira, the Chachma Bina Das of Yetzira. Next, the Shechina that is connected to the world of Asiya, which is what? It's the lowest level of Yetzirah, Malchus of Yetzirah. In other words, it's Malchus of Atzilus, as it encloses itself in Malchus of Bria, and encloses itself in Malchus of Yetzirah. That becomes the divine energy that will then be felt and experienced in the world of Asiya. It will create and sustain the creatures of Asiya only following its indwelling in the Kodesh HaKadoshim of Asiya, in the brain of Asiya, in the Chachma Bina Das of Asiya, and from that Kodesh HaKadoshim, the energy of the Shechina will be transmitted to all of the elements and components of the body of Asiya, of the organism of Asiya, as discussed at the end of 52. In the beginning of 53, the Alter Rebbe explained and discussed the level of consciousness that pervaded the Holy of Holies in this world during the time of the first temple, the first Beis HaMikdash. In chapter 52, he deals with all of the higher universes. 53 begins with this world. What was the level of consciousness and identity that was experienced in the shrine of Kodesh HaKadoshim in this world during the first Beis HaMikdash? Or in other words, you can ask, what was the nature of the Shechina that dwelled in Kodesh HaKadoshim? What do we mean when we say the Shechina, the Divine Presence, was manifested conspicuously in the Holy of Holies during the first Beis HaMikdash? So the Alter Rebbe said that the Kodesh HaKadoshim during the first Commonwealth was extraordinary in the fact that it experienced the Shechina of the world of Bria. Malchus of Atzilus, as it was enclosed in Malchus de Bria, that was manifest and present. It pervaded the consciousness of the Kodesh HaKadoshim during the first Beis HaMikdash. Thus, the tablets that lied in the ark in the Kodesh HaKadoshim were physical, but nonetheless were not defined by the limitations that physical properties are usually subjected to. Because although they were physical, they were a product of Malchus of Bria, unlike everything in this world that is manufactured, of course through the Shechina, but through the Shechina of Malchus de Yitzira that goes into Kodesh HaKadoshim of Asiya, that then goes into Malchus of Asiya. In Kodesh HaKadoshim you had a revelation of Malchus of Bria, and therefore the product, the Luchos HaBris, Maisa Lekim Chayim, totally transcended the limitations that usually define physical substances that we associate, that we identify readily, immediately. This was the first Beis HaMikdash. Now let's continue with further insight. Page 148, Taf Ayin Dalet Amid Beis, three lines from the top. Zogdal Terebbe, Baba Yisheini, during the second Beis HaMikdash, during the second temple, Shaloi Ho Yeboya Aron Valuchus, in which the Ark, the Aron, and the tablets of the covenant that had within them engraved the Ten Commandments that encapsulated Torah, were not present in the second Beis HaMikdash. There was no ark there. There were no tablets in the ark. Amru Razal. Our sages have said, Rabbi Yisenu Zichronim Levrach, our rabbis of blessed memory have stated, Shaloi Ha'isa Shechina Shoyribui, that indeed the Shechina did not abide there. In the second temple, the Shechina did not abide. And the Alter Rebbe says, Pirush this means. And he right away, whenever he writes Pirush, he's indicating that it's not to be understood literally, that there was no Shechina there. As we shall see in a moment, how he deduces this truth. But he's going to interpret what the Gemara, what our sages meant when they said that the Shechina did not dwell in the second a temple in Yerushalayim, in the holy city of Yerushalayim. The Gemara in Tractate Yuma, Mesichta Yuma, page 21, Daf Chafalo from Medbeis, says that in the second Beis HaMikdash, there were five things that were lacking. They were there during the first temple, and they were gone during the second Beis HaMikdash. The first, the Gemara counts, is Aron, Kapoiris, and Kruvim. That whole edifice that was the hallmark of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Ark, on top of it, its lid, the Kapoiris, and the Kruvim, the cherubs, the image of the male and the female representing Hashem and the Jewish people on top of the lid of the Aron, that did not exist in the second Beis HaMikdash, and automatically the Luchos that were in the Aron, Moshe Rabbeinu's tablets, were not there. What happened to the Aron? So the Gemara in Yuma, Daflon Beis, brings the famous argument. The Mishnah says there about, the Mishnah discusses there the process of the Kohen Gadol's work during Yom Kippur in the second Beis HaMikdash. So the Mishnah says there was no ark. So basically the service was centered around the stone, the Evan Shasiya, Mimais Neviim HaRishayinim, that famous stone, rock, that lie in the Holy of Holies, known as the Evan Shasiya, which the Gemara discusses there as the stone that was extremely central to the entire creation of the world and so forth. So the Gemara asks, what happened to the Aron? There are two opinions. One opinion is Aron Gala Lebavel, after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash through the Babylonian emperor, Nebuchadnezzar. The Aron was exiled to Babylonia, and since then it's been gone. Another opinion, which is the most quoted opinion, and the Rambam in Hilchos Beis HaBchira, chapter 4, discusses and accepts this opinion and discusses it at length, is Aron b'mkaymei nignas. The Aron was concealed in its place. The Rambam goes to the extent, he discusses that Shlomo HaMelech, when he built the first Beis HaMikdash, he put up the first Beis HaMikdash, I mentioned last week in the year, Gimel Tav Tav Kuf Chav Ches, which would mean 3,928 since creation. When Shlomo built the structure of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Rambam says, Bona by Makim Lignus by Aron. He built in the structure beneath the mountain. He built a hiding place for the Aron. But Matmainius Amukos Va'Kalkal, as the Rambam says, he dug very deep and complex and winding crevices. And Yoshiyahu HaMelech, who lived close to the destruction a few hundred years later, was actually the one who took the Aron and placed it in the hiding place that Shlomo HaMelech prepared for it. There's a third opinion that the Aron was hidden in the Beis HaMikdash, but not right under the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but under the mountain, removed from the place of Kodesh HaKadoshim. But in any case, in a revealed way, in Bayu Sheni, you didn't see an Aron. That was one thing that was missing. The second thing that was missing, the Gemara says, is Eish, the fire from heaven that would accompany all offerings during the first temple on the altar. The third thing the Gemara says, the Shechina was gone, the divine presence. Then the Gemara says, Ruach HaKodesh was gone, and the Urim V'Tumim was not there. That special element in the Kohen Gadol's garments that was really a prophetic power was also not there. And the Gemara discusses on Daf Nun Beis other. This is Daf Chafal of Daf Nun Beis, other things that were not there. And just as the ark was concealed, it's in Senes Haman. And the little jug with the manna that they saved from the times of the desert was not there, even though it was there in the first Beis HaMikdash. The staff of Aaron, the famous miraculous staff of Aaron that had the almonds grow on it during the time of Korach, Parshas Korach, was gone, even though it was there in the first Beis HaMikdash. The Shemen HaMishcha, the oil that Moshe Rabbeinu created to anoint the Mishkan and the Kohen Gadol and the Kohenim, was gone. And so on and so forth. Now, the Gemara in Zvachim, Daf Kuf Yitas, Adav Kuf Yud Chasamet Beis says clearly that in the second Beis Hamikdash the Shechina was Shaira. The Shechina dwelled in the second Beis Hamikdash. The Gemara writes that clearly in Zvonchim. Here in Yuma it says that was one of the things that was missing. What does the Alter Rebbe mean when he says Amru Razan Shalai Hayser Shechina Shaira? But he's referring apparently to a Gemara in Yuma, but on Daf Tesamet Beis. Could be also Daf Chafalef, but primarily, most probably, to Daf Tesamet Beis. And I want to quote to you this Gemara because only with it will we appreciate Alter Rebbe's response to this Gemara. And I'm sorry, his explanation of this Gemara. The Gemara in Yuma says as follows. Tells a story about Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish havasachi biyardona. Reish Lakish was taking a swim in the Jordanian River. I guess it was safe those days. Aser Rabba Bar Bar Chana Yahav Leyad. When Reish Lakish finished his swim, for people that are against yeshiva bachrim taking care of their bodies, taking a swim, so here you have a Gemara that Reish Lakish lived in Israel, in Eretz Yisrael, and he would swim in the Jordanian River. Now, Reish Lakish, as the commentators explain, was a chubby fellow. So when he was ready to get out, Rabba Bar Bar Chana saw he wants to get out. He jumped into the water and he stretched out his arm to assist Rabba Bar Bar Chana to come out of the river. I don't want to sound irreverent, but maybe that's why he actually went swimming. To take care of himself. In any case, Rabba Bar Bar Chana came and stretched out his arm. Amar Lei, Reish Lakish tells Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Elikos ninalichu. God hates you guys. Rabba Bar Chana comes into the river to help him get out. So he looks at him, he refuses to give him his arm. He says, Hashem doesn't like you guys. So Rashi explains, who are you guys? Lekol bnei bavel. All Babylonians. Reish Lakish was from Eretz Yisrael. Rabba Bar Chana was a Babylonian. He came to the Jordanian from Bavel. He came to Israel from Bavel. He says, Hashem doesn't like all bnei Bavel. Why? Shalai alu bimei Ezra, umanu shchina milavoi milashruv lishres b'bayis sheni. They did not make Aliyah in the time of Ezra, and thus they prevented the Shechina from coming back into the second Beis HaMikdash. We all know, when Ezra and Nehemiah made Aliyah from Bavel, from present-day Iraq, back to Eretz Yisrael, to rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash after permission was granted from the Persian emperors, that's actually when the Purim miracle occurred. In the year Tav Ches, it's estimated, which means in the year Shin Lamed Ches was the Churban. So 70 years later, the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash was in the year 3338, 3338 since creation, 70 years later, which means 3408, 3408 years. That's when the Purim event occurred in Persia, in Iran. And that was also the era around those years when the Persian emperors gave permission to rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash, although it happened in a few stages. And Ezra came back, and the Pasuk tells us in Ezra that out of perhaps millions of Jews, 42,000 Jews came back to Eretz Yisrael. Everybody else stayed behind in Iraq. They built up beautiful communities and great institutions. 42,000 Jews, the Pasuk says the exact number, 42 plus, came up to Eretz Yisrael and built the second Beis HaMikdash. So Reish Lakish was very upset with the Babylonians, that everybody remained there and nobody had the willingness, the courage, the stamina to go back to Eretz Yisrael. And he says, because of you guys, the Shechina never came back. Elikos ninalichu. This is how Rashi explains it. And the Gemara discusses that one of the last prophets died, Chagai, Zecharia, Malachi, who lived during the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, Nistalka Ruach HaKodesh Miyisrael. Ruach HaKodesh, the Divine Spirit, left the Jewish people. Then the Gemara goes into a whole discussion if it was really Rabba Bar Bar Chana, because generally Reish Lakish had a custom not to talk to anybody in public besides very unique individuals. But then the Gemara says as follows. When Rish Lakish came to his brother-in-law, Rabbi Yochanan, he told him the story. So Rabbi Yochanan told him, Lav hainu taima. This is not the reason that the Shechina didn't dwell in the second Beis HaMikdash. Inami kulus liku b'mei Ezra, lehav ashayu Shechina b'mikdash shein. Even if everybody would have went up, the Shechina would have not dwelled in the second Beis HaMikdash. The problem was a different problem. It wasn't the Jewish problem. The Ksiv, the Pasuk says, Noach blesses his children. In Parashas Noach, it says, Yafta lekim liyefes v'yishkoin ba'al eshem. Which means, Hashem should extend His splendor to the children of Yefes, but He should dwell in the tents of Shem. Afel gav the yafta lekim liyefes ein hashchina sheir ela ba'al eshem. Hashem will extend His splendor to the descendants of Yefes. But dwelling, He will dwell only in tents that were created by Shem. The second Beis HaMikdash was created with the consent of the Persians, who were descendants of Yefes. The first Beis HaMikdash was erected through Shlomo HaMelech, who was a grandchild of Shem. For Yishkoin, if you want the Shechina, you need Ahal Shem. You can't have. It's just the second temple was not an edifice that was conducive to this type of divine revelation. So this was the two opinions, between the two views of Rish Lakish in contrast to Rabbi Yochanan. But they both, their conclusion is what Alter Rebbe is saying here. Amar Razan Shloi Hoyser Shechina Sheira Bebayis Sheini. I mean, it's interesting, it's sad. In the kinois of Tisha B'Av, in the lamentations that we say on Tisha B'Av, there's a liturgy that begins with the words, Mi Yitein Roishi Mayim. And it discusses the horrific events of the First Crusade in 1096. In 1996, they observed 900 years of that crusade that destroyed and demolished the Jewish communities of the Rhineland, of the Rhine, particularly the three famous, well-known, established Jewish communities in Vermeise, Worms, in Speyer, and in Mainz. They were three communities on the Rhineland in Germany, and the Christians, in their crusade to Israel, to the Holy Land, to recapture it from the Muslims, decided to extend their wrath upon the Jewish people, and they extended to the Jews the choice between the cross and the sword, and all the communities of the Rhineland were destroyed. Mainz and Spires and Worms. But the destruction and havoc in Worms, it's known as Vermeise in Worms. That's the city where Rashi lived for a while. The destruction in Worms was the worst. It was the worst. The blood, the violence in Worms, it hit worse than in any other community. So in the Kinnis of Tisha B'Av, Mi'itin Reishi Mayim, we have the description of this horrific darkness that befell the holy community of Worms. And the story is told that the Jewish communities in the Rhine were established after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. And the first establishment was in the city of Vermeise, in the city of Worms. When Nebuchadnezzar exiled the Jews, the majority of the Jewish people settled in Iraq, but many of them settled in different countries, and a large settlement took root in the city of Worms in Germany. And they were shown a lot of benevolence and kindness by the local Gentiles and local authorities. They were extended a lot of privileges, and they really lived a comfortable life. When the Jews in Yerushalayim built the second Beis HaMikdash, they wrote letters to Jews in the other yeshuvim of Jews, other communities, to come join them. So from Babylonia, you had 42,000 Jews, and later some other Jews joined. Not all of them, like Rish Lakish brings out here, but some. They sent a letter to Worms, saying, come, help us build the second Beis HaMikdash, let's resettle Eretz Yisrael. The Jewish community of Worms wrote back a letter. And in the famous letter they wrote back, they wrote in a very arrogant way, they said, "You continue enjoying your great Yerushalayim, and let us sit and enjoy our small Yerushalayim." They believed that Worms substituted Yerushalayim, and not one Jew of Worms made Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. Not one Jew of Worms. And sadly, what was seemed as a Yerushalayim, as happened so often in exile, it became the center of bloodshed and violence against the Jews who lived there. So this is the point Reish Lakish brought out, although he was talking about Bavel, and Rabbi Yochanan disagreed with this approach. Now, how do we reconcile this Gemara with the Gemara in Zvachim, Daf Kuf Yud Ches, that the Shekhinah did dwell in Bayis Sheni? Or as the Alter Rebbe is soon going to bring out with the Halacha, that you weren't allowed to walk into the Holy of Holies during the Second Temple, and if you did, you didn't walk out. You know, if it was just a regular Beis Medrash, on 16th Avenue in Borough Park, it wouldn't have that spiritual electricity that could consume a soul. So the Alter Rebbe explains. The Alter Rebbe says, Pirush, this is Pshat. Let's understand what the Gemara means in Yuma. Pirush, the Gemara means, Madregas Shchinah Sheis Hashayda B'Bayis Rish. The category of the Shchinah, the terminology of the Shchinah, that used to abide in the first temple, that was not present in Bayis Sheni. Shaloi kederech ishtal shlus olamos. What was the category of Shekhinah? What do we mean when we say the Shekhinah dwelled in the first temple? We mean shaloi kederech ishtal shlus olamos. A divine energy that was present in the Holy of Holies in the physical world that did not come into this world in the usual evolutionary manner of all of the universes. Usually the divine energy, the Shekhinah that's present in this world, evolves. It goes through a very intense, nuanced, complicated evolutionary process from more spiritual to less spiritual to less spiritual, from more aloof, from more abstract to less aloof, to less sublime, until it assumes the veneers, the garbs, the veils, that then allow it to invigorate and animate nature and existence of this physical world. But in Kodesh HaKadoshim, there was a leap, there was a quantum leap of the divine energy, and the Shekhinah came in there not going through the process of evolution. That type of Shekhinah, the Shekhinah of Malchus of Atzilus, of Malchus of Bria, being manifest without going through Yetzirah and Asiyah, that was Bayis Rish. What about the Bayis Sheni? Ela b'Bayis Sheni, however, in the second Beis Hamikdash, ha'yisashayre k'derech ishtalshulus v'yislapshus. You did have the indwelling of the Shekhinah, but it was vested, it abided according to the order of a gradual evolution and descent. Ishtalshulus means evolution, ishtalshulus means enclothement. It went in, it garbed itself in one stage, and then it evolved and garbed itself in the next level, and then it evolved in the next level. And he explains what this process was in Bayis Sheni. Malchus da Atzilus, which is the Shekhinah, but Malchus de Bria. Malchus of Atzilus was vested in the level we call Malchus of Bria. U de Bria, but Malchus de Yitzir. Malchus of Bria that was then vested in the level we call Malchus of Yitzir. U de Yitzirah. And the Malchus of Yetzirah, which is the Shekhinah of the world of Yetzirah, Beheichel Kotshe Kadashim Da'asiyah, now dwelled in the chamber of Holy of Holies of the world of Asiyah, which are the three faculties, Chachma, Bina, Das of Asiyah, as we explained before. Every world has its brain. Every world has its Kodesh HaKadashim. So the Shekhinah of Yetzirah dwelled in the Kodesh HaKadashim of the higher spiritual world of Asiyah. That was the shrine, the Kodesh Kodashim of Asiyah, the Kodshe Kodashim d'Asiyah, and the Holy of Holies of the spiritual world of Asiyah, Hayim Islabish b'Kodshe Kodashim shebebeis hamikdash shalamata. It was clothed in the Holy of Holies of the temple below, here in the physical world. In this physical world, in the shrine of the Holy of Holies in Yerushalayim on the mountaintop, you had the indwelling and the conspicuous manifestation of Malchus of Yetzirah as it is manifested and transmitted through Kodshi Kadashim of Asiyah, and that dwelled in the Kodesh HaKadashim of the Second Temple. V'sharis abay hashchina. And this is what we mean. That the Shechina dwelled there. What do we call Shechina of Bayis Sheni? Malchus the Yitzira amul abeshes b'katsha kadashim da'asiyah. The Malchus of Yitzira, which was clothed in the Holy of Holies of the spiritual world of Asiyah. Everything in this physical world experiences its life, its identity, its consciousness through what? Through Malchus of Yitzira, enclothing itself in Kodesh Kadashim of Asiyah, that then encloses itself in Malchus of Asiyah. And Malchus of Asiyah is now the pipeline, the heart, so to speak, that now allocates the blood and the energy of the brain of Asiyah, of the Shechina of Yetzirah, to the entire organism, to the entire body of Asiyah. In Bayis Sheni, there was a leap. From Kodesh Kodashim of Asiyah, it went straight in to the chamber of the Beis HaMikdash without going through Malchus of Asiyah. So the Shechina dwelt there. Of course, the Shechina dwelt there. When we say Shechina and Bayis Rishon, we mean Malchus of Atzilus and Malchus de Bria, skipping Yetzirah and Asiyah. When we talk about Bayis Sheni, it's Malchus of Atzilus in Malchus of Bria, in Malchus of Yetzirah, in Chabar of Asiyah, skipping Malchus of Asiyah, which is in itself a very intense level of holiness. V'lachein das loyayarashayishum adam likanis sham. Therefore, there was a halacha. No man was permitted to enter there, levad kohen gadol b'yom kippurim, except the high priest on the holy day of Yom Kippur. Why? Because there was an extremely intense spiritual divine electricity that was revealed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim of Bayis Sheni. You had the revelation of Malchus of Yetzirah and Kodesh HaKadoshim of Asiyah without going through the transformation and the major veil that Malchus d'Asiyah imposes upon these levels of godliness that can then give rise to our physical world in which you sense no holiness whatsoever. Yet, relative to the Shechina of Bayis Rishon, you say the Shechina of Bayis Rishon was not present there. That level of consciousness was not present in the world during Bayis Sheni. It was not present in Kodesh HaKadoshim, and therefore it wasn't allocated to the world either. It's interesting because the Gemara in Yuma does describe the difference between the two temples. The Gemara there on the Tesamet Aleph says that during the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, for 410 years, there were merely 18 high priests. And in Tosfos, other versions are brought. There's one version 10, one version 8, but maximum 18. 410 years, 18 high priests served. During the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, 420 years, the Gemara says, more than 300 high priests were in office. And the Gemara says, wait one second. Take off 80 years of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, who reigned, who served as the high priest during the second Beis HaMikdash. Take off 80 years. So you're basically left with 340 years. 420. So he left with 340 years. Take off another 40 years of Shimon HaTzadik. He served 40 years. Yochanan served 80 years. So you're down to 300. So for 300 years, he had more than 300 Kohanim Gadolim. The Gemara says, Lo Yitziyu Shnasim. They didn't make it through the year. And the commentators explain that the office was usually bought off. It was a position that was bought off through bribery, through money, through political power, and so forth. And many of them just died, and many of them died on Yom Kippur. They went into the Holy of Holies, and they didn't come out. The Lubavitcher Rebbe once had a Fabrengen, and he says, from this Gemara itself, he says, Zetna vas Ayidish Neshama is. He said, from this Gemara itself, you see what Ayidish Neshama is. They were corrupt people. They bought the office, the position of Kohen Gadol through bribery. But what were they buying? What did they use their corruption for? They should be able to go into the Holy of Holies, knowing that they're not going to come out because they saw what happened to their friend last year. And they knew that they weren't holier. So they used their corruption to be able to experience godliness. And they knew that they're going to have to pay for their life with it. But in any case, it was not that level of Shekhinah, that's for sure. Now, I want to discuss a few moments what Alter Rebbe is saying here, because he says it so briefly, and it's difficult to really relate to what he's saying, but it is explained more at length in a discourse of his grandson, the Tzemach Tzedek, in Parshas Veschanan, in his monumental works of Eir HaTorah. Everybody knows the famous Gemara in Yume Daf Samach Tes Amud Beis. The Gemara describes there what occurred during the erection of the second Beis HaMikdash. The second Beis HaMikdash was created, as we mentioned, by Ezra, Nehemiah, the 42,000 Jews that came from Babel. And that was the time of Anshei Knesset HaGdela, the men of the great assembly that included Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, it included Mordechai, who lived through the Purim event that was during the same time, the end of the Babylonian Galus and the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash during the Persian Galus. The Persian Galus. So the Gemara tells a story in Yumidav Samachtetz, quoting the pasuk in Nehemiah, "Vayitzaku el Hashem elokim b'kol gadol," that the Levites screamed to Hashem in a major thundering voice. The Gemara says, what did they scream about? Baya, baya, woe, 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 woe. They were screaming to Hashem about the Yitzra d'Avei Dezara. During the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, the greatest temptation that existed in the world was Yitzra d'Avei Dezara. Jews and non-Jews had a major temptation to worship idols. So they screamed, "Vaya, vaya, whoa, whoa! Hainu hai da achrave le mikdashe v'kalya lehechle v'katlinu lekulat tzaddike v'aglinu liyisom me'arim v'adayin me'raket beinon." This yetzer hara, this inclination to idolatry, against which Moshe Rabbeinu warned throughout Chumash. You see, particularly in Sefer Dvarim Deuteronomy, you see how Moshe Rabbeinu warns the Jewish people against succumbing to the temptation of idolatry. Throughout the entire Tanakh, all of the prophets are thundering, are begging, are pleading, are protesting against idolatry. This curse, they said, because of it, the temple was destroyed, the Heichel burnt, the Tzaddikim massacred, the Jews exiled, and it's still dancing among us. They turned to Hashem, they said, "You gave us this inclination in order that we should overcome it, and we should receive great reward. We're not interested in the Yetzer, and we're not interested in the reward. Do us a favor, take away this inclination, and we don't need the reward that we will receive if we overcome this inclination." And the tzetel, the scrap, the piska, the note fell from heaven. It said, "Emes." They realized that they have divine assistance in this one. And the Gemara describes how they fasted 3 days and three nights, and the Yitzra d'Avei Dezara, the inclination to idolatry, was given over to them, and they killed it. The men of the great assembly put it to waste. That's what the Gemara describes. Then they tried doing a similar thing with the inclination towards Arayas, towards immoral relationships, and they imprisoned it for 3 days, and they realized that the world will not have a future. If people will not have that lust, families will not be created, and the world will become extinct. So they weakened it, they colored one of its eyes, but it still retains its intensity, as I guess we all know. Now this is obviously a very interesting and mystical piece of Gemara. For us today, it's very difficult to relate to the Yitzra d'Avei Dezara. But if you read the Tanakh, you see during the times of the first Beis HaMikdash, it was an unbelievable temptation. People, Pashat, went crazy about worshipping idols. And if you learn the Gemara and the Midrashim and Tanakh, it's very obvious that you had some very religious Jews. Yeravam ben Nevat was no idiot. Yerovam HaNevot was considered the greatest gaon of his generation, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin Kuf Gimel. And nonetheless, it came to Avodah Zarah, it just captivated him. And he compelled an entire generation of Jews to worship idols. Great kings, leaders, thinkers. The Gemara said, the Midrashim say, they were religious Jews. You had Jews who would only eat badats of Eid HaChredis. But they had a getchka in the backyard. You weren't dealing with rascals, with insensitive, apathetic people. These were Yidden who knew Shas, Bavli, well, there was no Shas yet, but both, they knew Torah well. They were scholars, they served Hashem, they did everything. When it came to Kashrus, Shabbos, Mahadrim, Mina Mahadrim. But in the closet somewhere, there was a getchka, and they were just immersed in that. And it's very, very difficult to understand. In the second Beis HaMikdash, that didn't exist anymore. So the Gemara Taka says in Yumid Aftas, the Gemara I mentioned earlier, the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Avodah Zarah, idolatry. And also Gilui Arayos and Shvichas Dam, immoral relationships and murder. The second Beis HaMikdash didn't happen. That didn't exist. There was no idolatry there, or very, very little. Mipnei Machar of Sinas Chinam. Sinas chinam means gratuitous hatred. It's an interesting term. Sinas chinam means vain hatred, baseless hatred, hatred that has no foundation. What is the meaning in this? This is what Alter Rebbe is really explaining to us here. Although in Tanya everything is very brief. It's like the Luchas, it has everything, but it's in ten sentences. But the Tzemach Tzedek brings it out very clearly. The building of the second Beis HaMikdash and the people of the second Beis HaMikdash may have outwardly been similar to the edifice of the first Beis HaMikdash and the people of the first Beis HaMikdash. But there was a drastic difference in the historical assumptions of the times. The assumptions, the consciousness that pervaded the era of the first Beis HaMikdash drastically changed during the historical era of the second Beis HaMikdash. In the very mechanism of human nature, there was a drastic transformation. And the transformation was one. In Bayis Rishon, you had Malchus of Bria present in the physical world. In Bayis Sheni, you had no more Bria present in the physical world. You had Asiya present in the physical world. Malchus of Yetzirah through Kachik Adashim of Asiya. Wasn't Malchus of Yetzirah in the world of Yetzirah. It had to go through the Kachik Adashim of Asiya, and that dwelled in the chamber of the Holy of Holies of the second Beis HaMikdash. The obsession of the Jews with idolatry in the first Beis HaMikdash may seem to us very strange, and when we read the stories, we say, lowlifes. Hashem warns and warns and warns and warns against it, and they just ignore everything, and they go engage in idols. They were ridiculous. It's absurd. Yes. The Tanakh says that Shlomo HaMelech at the end of his life succumbed to it. Fine, so our sages say you don't have to take it literally. But his women, his wives were engaged in it and he didn't protest it, so therefore the Pasuk deems him as though he was engaged in it. But the fact that it had such a power. I mean, Shlomo HaMelech was no peasant. And that's an understatement. I once told you the story about the Jew who came to the Kotzker and he said, why are we reading the Tanakh? It's a bunch of corrupt people engaged in idolatry. I mean, I would never do such things. So the Kotzker said, yeah, von Zeira Averis is geschrieben geworden a Teire, von deiner Mitzvahs wird kein Teire nicht geschrieben werden. You know, from their sins a Teire was created, a blueprint for life. From your Mitzvahs wird kein Teire nicht werden. Well, that was a very sharp way of expressing this truth that Their idolatry was obviously very unholy and it was a cause of destruction, but it's not indicative of their inferiority. In fact, it's indicative of their superiority. And let's explain this. During the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, godliness was the in thing. Faith was as natural to the human psyche as perhaps money is natural to the human psyche in present-day America. I mean, today, if you're normal, you have to have access to the internet. If not, you're just detached from reality. In the first Beis HaMikdash, if you were normal, you had to have a relationship with God. Emunah, faith, was the in thing. Spirituality, transcendence, metaphysics were extremely popular. Why? Because there was a center in the universe where Malchus of Bria, where the Shechina dwelled in a very conspicuous way, and the veil of the world was not so dense. The world was much more transparent. The world was much more translucent, I should say. When you viewed the physical world during the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, there was such an energy in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The brain was a different brain. The Kodesh HaKadoshim was a different brain. So the organism was a different organism. It's even hard for us to relate to it. But people viewed the world in a much more, in a spiritual context, in a transcendental context. Today we view the world in a very egocentric, physical, mundane context. We don't even understand. We don't even relate to that. Take even issues of life and death. If you read through the Tanakh, you see that death was much less significant for them than it is for us. Because for them, the soul and the transition of the soul was such a reality that the body was seen as a vehicle that served the soul for a couple of years and then you just went on. Today we don't have that perception. And the truth is the Torah doesn't want us to have that perception because in Torah, death is horrific and life is sacred. It's the most sacred thing in the world. But it's just the very conception of spirituality was very different. Today, in the last few decades, particularly in the last decade, we can maybe have a little inkling into this reality because there is a resurrection in the world today, a resurrected search for spirituality and meaning. But that's a separate subject that has to do with the unique era we live in today. Now, what is klipa? What is unholiness? What is the power of klipa? Klipa means a shell. Throughout Tanya, we learned about a klipa. What is the power of klipa? Klipa means Hashem created forces